At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
In the last episode, we covered evidence in support of the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald did, in fact, travel to Mexico City. But we also looked at information that supports Oswald being in Dallas at the same time when the Warren Report says that he was on the way to Mexico. Both of these things can't be true. The Warren Report says that Oswald went to Mexico City so that he could get an in-transit visa to the Soviet Union through Cuba. But it's worth noting that if Oswald wanted to go to the Soviet Union, he could have already done that with the visa he had. He just couldn't go through Cuba first with his existing visa. So assuming it really was Lee Harvey Oswald who was in Mexico City, either he didn't understand the law, or he really wanted to visit Cuba on his way to the Soviet Union, or something else was going on. In this episode, we look at what Oswald allegedly did while he was in Mexico City, including his visits with Cuban and Soviet diplomats. There were audio tapes and photos that should have been generated to document these incidents. What can we learn from the audio and photo evidence, or lack thereof?
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. On Friday, September 27th, 1963, around 10:30 a.m., an unknown man called the Soviet military attaché to ask about getting a visa to travel to Odessa, Russia. The man was told to contact the Soviet consulate and was given directions to their office. Minutes later, the same man called the Soviet consulate and asked to speak to the consul. He was told to call back around 11:30. Both of these calls were intercepted by the CIA and featured speakers who spoke only Spanish. About 20 minutes after the phone call to the Soviet military attaché, an unknown man appeared at the Cuban consulate, which was only two blocks away from the Soviet consulate. The man spoke exclusively in English to Sylvia Duran, an English-speaking Mexican citizen who was working as a secretary at the Cuban consulate. The man told Duran that his name was Lee Harvey Oswald and that he wanted a transit visa to Cuba for September 30th for 2 weeks, and after that, he wanted to go on to Russia. Duran told him that he needed to have photos of himself for her to be able to process his visa application. About 2 hours later, the man who called himself Oswald returned with four pictures. Sylvia Duran then stapled the photos to the application documents. Duran told the man that even though he now had the necessary photo, he still needed to first get a visa to the Soviet Union for him to be eligible for a travel visa through Cuba. Oswald then asked to see the Cuban consul, Eusebio Askew, who repeated what Duran had said, that he would first need a Soviet visa. In 1993, a book was written that detailed the interactions with the man who claimed to be Oswald inside of the Soviet consulate. According to the recollections of Soviet consulate officials Pavel Yatskov, Valery Kostikov, and Oleg Nechiporenko, Oswald rang the buzzer at the Soviet embassy around 12:30 on Friday, September 27th. He then told Nechiporenko that he had come to Mexico City because he didn't want the FBI to arrest him if he contacted the Soviet embassy in Washington, D.C. Nechiporenko responded that all visa applications had to be processed at the embassy of the applicant's home country. This meant that the Washington, D.C. embassy had to approve it, which would take at least 4 months. When Oswald heard that it would take another 4 months, he shouted, quote, "This won't do for me. This is not my case. For me, it's all going to end in tragedy." The Soviets offered Oswald the application so that he could fill it out and they could send it to Washington on his behalf to be processed. But Oswald did not fill out the application before he left the embassy. The fact that Oswald never submitted a Soviet visa application undermines the Warren Report's claim that Oswald spent time checking on his application because the application did not exist. Around 1:25 on that same Friday, a man the CIA says was Oswald called the Soviet consulate and asked to speak to the consul. He was told the consul would be there the next day between 4 and 5 o'clock. This conversation was exclusively in Spanish, and the call makes absolutely no sense in light of the fact that Oswald had either just left the Soviet consulate or was still inside of it when the unknown man placed the call. Later that day, around 4 o'clock, Oswald returned to the Cuban consulate. He told Sylvia Duran that he now had a Soviet visa, but he just wasn't able to physically produce it. Of course, this was a lie because he had been told by the Soviets that he had to wait at least 4 months for them to process his application. Duran then called the Soviet embassy and said that an American citizen was at the consulate saying that he received a Soviet visa and that he had been assured by the Soviet consul that he spoke with that there would be no problems. Oswald again insisted on a Cuban visa, but was again reminded that he first needed a Soviet visa to be eligible for a Cuban in transit visa. On the next day, Saturday, September 28th, CIA transcripts say that Sylvia Duran called the Soviet consulate at 11:51 a.m. She put an unidentified American on the phone who spoke to the Soviet consul in broken Russian. The consul told the man to come by the Soviet embassy since it was very close to the Cuban embassy. According to the translator of this call, the American spoke in, quote, "terrible, hardly recognizable Russian." As a quick sidebar, the languages spoken by the man alleged to be Oswald raise questions here. The man called the Russian consulate at first and spoke exclusively in Spanish, a language that Oswald did not speak. Then, when he spoke to the Cubans in person, he spoke only English, except for when he called the Soviet consulate from the Cuban embassy. On that occasion, he spoke in broken Russian. None of this makes any sense. There's no evidence that Oswald ever spoke Spanish. Indeed, when he was inside the Soviet embassy, Valery Kostikov says that he asked him if he spoke Spanish, And the man who claimed to be Oswald shook his head no. If Oswald did speak Spanish, then why do it on the phone to the Russians at first and then not speak Spanish when visiting the Cubans, whose native language was Spanish? We know that Oswald spoke fluent Russian, not broken Russian. His Russian was at least good enough for Russian instructor Peter Gregory to give Oswald a letter certifying him as a Russian translator. And it's not surprising that Oswald would be fluent in Russian, given that he lived in the Soviet Union for over 2 years. Back to the Saturday morning Cuban consulate visit where Oswald allegedly had Sylvia Duran call the Soviet embassy. There is some dispute as to whether this phone call ever happened at all. Sylvia Duran said that she did not call the Soviet embassy on that Saturday because the Cuban consulate was closed on Saturdays, which was also confirmed by consuls Askew and Mirabal. Duran point-blank denied that the call ever happened when speaking to author Anthony Summers. And Nechi Porenko, the Soviet consul, also confirms that there was no phone call from the Cuban consulate on Saturday because the switchboard was closed and a call could not possibly have gone through. The only evidence we have of this phone call is the CIA's transcript of the call and what Sylvia Duran said in a 10-page statement that she made while under duress, which we'll cover more in the next episode. Looking at the transcript of the Saturday morning call, it says that Duran said, quote, "There is a man here who says he has been to the Russian consulate." But the day before, Duran herself sent Oswald to the Soviet consulate and then confirmed on the phone with Kostikov that Oswald had, in fact, been there. As Professor John Newman points out, why would she say he says he has been to the Soviet consulate when she knew for a fact that he had been there? Zooming out even more, this Saturday phone call has no substance. The transcript says that Oswald said to the Soviet embassy, quote, "I was just at your embassy and they took my address. I did not know it then. I went to the Cuban embassy to ask for my address because they have it." This is nonsense talk. How could Oswald not know his address? If he didn't know his address, then how did he give it to the Soviets in the first place? While the Soviet officials deny that a call between Duran and the Soviet embassy even happened on Saturday morning, they confirm that the man claiming to be Oswald did visit the Soviet embassy in person on Saturday morning. He arrived at 9:30 a.m. when the consulate employees were getting ready for their regular Saturday morning volleyball game. According to Nechi Porenko, the man begged to be let in because he said he was being persecuted. The Soviet officials once again explained that there would be about a 4-month waiting period to get the visa. And once again, Oswald did not take the visa application forms that he was offered. We don't know what Oswald did on Sunday, September 29th or Monday, September 30th. But on Tuesday, October 1st, around 10:45 a.m., a man who said his name was Lee Oswald apparently spoke on the phone in English to the Soviet consulate. The Tuesday call is important because it was the only call where the name Oswald was spoken. But the challenge with the timing of that call is that, according to the Warren Report, Oswald boarded a bus on Tuesday at 8:30 a.m., which he was on at the time the CIA says the call was made to the Soviet consulate at 10:45. There were no cell phones back then, but who knows, maybe he called from a bus stop. Then again, Given that Oswald never applied for a Soviet visa, there was nothing for him to call the embassy about. The Mexico City station of the Central Intelligence Agency used photographic surveillance on the Soviet and Cuban consulates. This surveillance included the use of photographers and automated cameras that were activated whenever someone came through a surveilled entrance or exit to the buildings. During August, September, and October of 1963, between 2 and 39 photos were taken each day at the Soviet compound. But none of those pictures were given to the FBI or the Warren Commission. More relevant to our inquiry, the CIA took 16 photos of a person at the Soviet compound on Friday, September 27th, a day that Oswald visited. But the last picture that was taken was at 11:46 a.m., and Oswald arrived about 45 minutes later. So the CIA surveillance just happened to miss him. There were three different cameras at different locations around the Soviet compound. In 1978, the House Select Committee on Assassinations asked the CIA for photographic evidence of Oswald being in Mexico City. The CIA then gave the HSCA access to photos from one of the three surveillance sites, which did not have any pictures of Oswald. When the HSCA followed up to ask for photos from the other two surveillance sites, they were told that those photos and the logs about those photos had been destroyed. However, CIA personnel did corroborate that they saw a photo of Lee Harvey Oswald. This raises the question, if the CIA actually had a photograph of Oswald in Mexico City, why was it destroyed? It would seem to be a major piece of evidence against him if you believe that his motive was being a Marxist America hater. Okay, so there are no photographs of Oswald at the Soviet consulate. What about the Cuban consulate? By October of 1963, David Atlee Phillips, among other important roles at the CIA, was responsible for supervising surveillance posts in Mexico City. Phillips told the HSCA under oath that none of the automatic cameras outside the Cuban consulate were working at the time of Oswald's visit, and that there were no photos available of Oswald in Mexico City. Phillips said that the automatic pulse camera at the Cuban consulate had not been installed until December of 1963. When we look at an internal CIA dispatch from the Mexico City station on September 26 of 1963, it appears that David Atlee Phillips perjured himself when he spoke to the HSCA. That's because this document says that the pulse camera was tested and was found to be in good working order the day before Oswald visited the Cuban consulate. Moreover, the HSCA investigators determined that 10 feet of film was taken from one of the CIA cameras that was pointed at the Cuban consulate on September 27th. That film was then developed. Photos of the man who entered the Cuban consulate were on this film, but the film has since disappeared. All of the pictures that the CIA had from the automatic camera coverage of the Cuban consulate, as well as 5 packages of undeveloped film, were sent from Mexico City to Langley. When the HSCA asked to review this material, the CIA said that it could not locate the photos because they were sent as a transmittal manifest, which was a, quote, unaccountable document that was not made part of the permanent record and therefore was not retrievable. What's even more strange about the CIA not capturing any photos of Oswald in Mexico City is that the station chief for Mexico City, Winston Scott, said in his unpublished manuscript that they did. Scott said, quote, "Persons watching the Cuban and Soviet embassies photographed Oswald as he entered and left each one and clocked the time he spent on each visit. If Oswald was photographed when he entered and when he left, and the time was noted, then where are these pictures and these notes?" The head of the Mexico City CIA station says that they existed. But the CIA representatives who spoke to the HSCA, namely David Atlee Phillips, steadfastly denied the existence of these photos. Here's what Richard Helms, who was the deputy director of plans at the CIA at the time of the assassination, and would go on to be the director of the agency, had to say about the Mexico City photos.
"It's my recollection that at the time of Oswald's presence in Mexico City, there was something wrong with some of the cameras that we were using. We were trying to fix it. But the fact remains that there are no photographs of Lee Harvey Oswald taken while he was in Mexico City at that time, and I can't explain 100% why not."
It turns out that there are photos in existence of the man who identified himself as Lee Harvey Oswald at the Cuban consulate, but they aren't from the CIA. These two photos came to light in an August 1978 interview of former Cuban consul Eusebio Askew by CBS reporter Ed Rabel. Askew produced photos that were taken from cameras inside the Cuban consulate that were operated by the Cuban government. Neither of these photographs looks like Lee Harvey Oswald, and it's not close. In fact, the pictures support what Askew initially said, which was that the man who called himself Oswald had thin blonde hair, was about 5'6", and was over 30 years old. When he saw Lee Harvey Oswald on TV, Askew said that he, quote, "did not even resemble the man who visited their consulate." Sylvia Duran initially said that the man had blonde hair and blue-green eyes, but later she signed a 10-page statement under duress saying that the man was Oswald. And after that, she confirmed again that it was not Oswald years later. We'll cover more on Sylvia Duran's ordeal in the next episode. When the HSCA investigated the case, they spoke with two CIA assets who worked inside the Cuban consulate. Those assets told them that the consensus among employees within the Cuban consulate after the Kennedy assassination was that it was not Lee Harvey Oswald who had been there. We know that at least one conversation between Oswald and the Soviets was recorded because after President Kennedy was assassinated, FBI agents Clements, Bookout, and Hostie listened to it. The agents sat in on Oswald's interrogation at the Dallas Police Department. Those same agents later listened to the CIA tape recording of a call between the man said to be Oswald and the Soviet consul. When J. Edgar Hoover was notified about what was on the recording, he called President Johnson on November 23rd, the day after the assassination. The phone call, which was recorded, was partially transcribed, but the recording itself and the rest of the transcription has gone missing. I'm not going to speculate about what was said that is no longer in the record, but here is the relevant part of what the official transcript says. President Johnson, "Have you established any more about the visit to the Soviet embassy in Mexico City in September?" J. Edgar Hoover, "No, that's one angle that's very confusing for this reason. We have up here the tape and the photograph of the man who was at the Soviet embassy using Oswald's name. That picture and the tape do not correspond to this man's voice, nor to his appearance. In other words, it appears that there is a second person who was at the Soviet embassy down there. By the way, Hoover wasn't the only one who thought someone was pretending to be Oswald in Mexico City. The HSCA's Lopez report determined that there was not sufficient evidence to firmly conclude that Oswald was impersonated, but, quote, the evidence is of such a nature that the possibility cannot be dismissed. Hoover followed up his phone call to President Johnson with a 5-page memo that said the FBI agents reviewed the tape and they concluded that the voice was not Lee Harvey Oswald. Another memo from Hoover to James Rowley of the Secret Service said, quote, agents who have conversed with Oswald in Dallas have observed photographs of the individual referred to above and have listened to a recording of his voice. These special agents are of the opinion that the above referred to individual was not Lee Harvey Oswald. In suggesting to President Johnson that there was an Oswald imposter in Mexico City, he's telling the president that what the CIA is saying is not true. It appears that J. Edgar Hoover had some trust issues with the CIA based on a handwritten note that Hoover put in the margin of an FBI report about domestic CIA activities. In the margin of this memo, Hoover wrote, quote, okay, but I hope you are not being taken in. I can't forget the CIA withholding the French espionage activities in the USA and the false story, R.E. Oswald's trip to Mexico, only to mention two instances of their double dealing. Yes, J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the FBI, called the CIA's version of Oswald going to Mexico a, quote, false story. Even though we know these tapes made their way to Dallas and were listened to by three FBI agents, as reported by J. Edgar Hoover to President Johnson, the tapes immediately disappeared after that. On November 23rd, Special Agent Eldon Rudd wrote a memo that said, quote, CIA has advised that these tapes have been erased and are not available for review. On November 24th, the day Ruby killed Oswald, the Mexico City CIA station advised CIA HQ that they had rechecked the tapes and confirmed that the recordings of Oswald at the Soviet consulate had already been erased. But there were transcripts of these tapes which were provided to FBI agent Clark Anderson. Anderson advised the FBI that the recording had been erased before the assassination, which is not possible if the three FBI agents actually heard the tape, as they told Hoover. On the next day, November 25th, Bert Turner, an FBI supervisor in Washington, sent a cable to Agent Clark Anderson in Mexico City that said, quote, if tapes covering any contact with Oswald with Soviet or Cuban embassies are available, forward to Bureau for laboratory examination. Include tapes previously reviewed in Dallas if they were returned to you. This internal FBI memo is yet another acknowledgement that the tape existed after the assassination and was reviewed in Dallas, just like J. Edgar Hoover told President Johnson. In April of 1964, three Warren Commission attorneys, David Slauson, William Coleman, and Howard Willens, went to Mexico City and learned for the first time that the CIA had intercepted and recorded phone calls at the Soviet compound. Here's David Slauson talking about this tape of Lee Harvey Oswald.
My best recollection is they offered to us to listen. They said to us, it was Win Scott, that would you like to listen to the tapes? And so they played a little bit of it for us.
Both Slauson, as you just heard, and William Coleman have expressly stated that they listened to the Oswald tape in April of 1964 in Mexico City, which is one more thing that confirms J. Edgar Hoover's story that the tape did, in fact, still exist. When former Mexico City Station Chief Winston Scott died on April 26, 1971, CIA Counterintelligence Chief James Angleton came to his house to retrieve the contents of his safe before he was buried. Angleton took a manuscript, photos, and a vinyl tape recording that Scott told his wife was of Lee Harvey Oswald. It appears that an audio tape of the man who said he was Oswald did exist. This tape was then destroyed and apparently lied about. The only counterpoint is that the CIA said that the tape was erased. Given the facts here, one would have to have unflinching trust in the CIA to believe the agency's representations, instead of J. Edgar Hoover, the three FBI agents who were present in Dallas, Agent Burt Turner, Warren Commission investigators David Slauson and William Coleman, and Mexico City CIA Station Chief Winston Scott. Next time on Solving JFK, we continue to look at the Mexico City saga, including what Marina Oswald said about it and a letter to the Soviet embassy that was allegedly from Lee Harvey Oswald. We'll also examine the way that the Mexico City incident was used by President Johnson to recruit members to his commission on the assassination of President Kennedy, which was eventually known as the Warren Commission. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
At Tanger Outlets, find hundreds of brands at unbeatable value. Save big on outerwear, must-have handbags, active essentials, classic favorites, footwear, and more up to 70% off. Shop Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. All the best brands, all on sale, every day. Only at Tanger Outlets.